Good afternoon. It's Wednesday, the 6th of March, 2019, just after 1 o'clock. Welcome to UK Column News. Your host today, Mike Robinson, myself, Brian Gerrish. We're also joined by David Ellis from Strategic Defence Initiatives. And where do we start? Defence.
Well, we're starting with DEFCON 1, as we're calling it. This was a meeting at the Defence Select Committee yesterday. It was entitled The UK's Response to Hybrid Threats. And we were quite interested with the panel of speakers. On the left there, you have Dr. Robert Johnson, who's director of the Changing Character of War Centre at the University of Oxford, Pembroke College. And in the middle is Chris Donnelly, who's director of the Institute for Statecraft and Integrity Initiative. And on the right is Dr. Andrew Mumford, who's assistant professor in politics and international relations at the University of Nottingham and consultant to NATO. He's also been a consultant to the Ministry of Defence in the past with respect to the Defence Review. So, the first question they were asked was, the panel was asked by the Defence Select Committee was, you know, how would you define hybrid threats? How would you define hybrid warfare? And this was kind of the theme. You could argue, according to Dr. Robert Johnson, you could argue that if you took the word hybrid off the front, we'd just be talking about contemporary approaches to armed conflict. And so there was quite a bit of discussion between the three of them about what hybrid war and hybrid threats meant. And really, it means, well, as Chris Donnelly said, it means in hybrid warfare, everything is in a weapon. Everything is a weapon. But anyway, Chris Donnelly was asked for his thoughts on this. So let's have a listen to what he had to say.
And there are various models of strategy. Most people think of chess as a strategic game, a strategic model. But I thought you might be interested in to understand that Putin doesn't play chess to hone his strategic thing. He plays the Japanese-Chinese game of Go. And it's different. And this is a very simple example of a simple Go game. To emphasise that, unlike chess, Go's has not a lot of complicated rules. It's got very simple rules, but the game becomes highly complex very quickly. And what you've got in this game is actually the game has started here in the bottom right-hand corner, and it's all you have to do to win the game is surround two of your opponent's discs with your own. But as that begins to get complicated, one of the players has started another game in the top right-hand corner, and then another game in the top left-hand, and then in the bottom left-hand. And suddenly you could play this on a larger board, and you've got an extremely complicated situation where you've got lots of different little games going on. And the strategist, the player, has to be able to understand and keep a track of all those different plays at the same time.
So let me welcome David Ellis to the programme. David, we were there yesterday, and well, were you impressed by Chris Donnelly and his colleagues, first of all? And second of all, you know, he went on to say, you know, as we said earlier, that in hybrid warfare, everything is a weapon. But he actually denied then that Britain was taking part in hybrid warfare, and yet he is the head of an organisation which many would argue is doing exactly that.
Yes, quite. And from whose perspective? You know, who am I answering? From what point of view am I answering? Am I answering on behalf of the EU, or am I answering on behalf of Britain as a nation? So, I mean, one thing that was really, really clear there yesterday, that hybrid warfare was being conducted, and it was being conducted in the Defence Committee. And it kind of reminded me of something sort of, you know, along the lines that some of the, because it was so woolly, and it's their inability as highly academic and advisors type sort of levels that they're professing to be on, that it was just so ambiguous and nebulous, you know. So, I mean, on the whole, was I impressed? I think I saw what I expected to see, really, which was a co-op of carry on?
Well, let's just look at that co-op of carry on, because the next question that came up was the question of whether the UK is actually taking part in hybrid warfare itself. So let's look at Dr. Robert Johnson's response to that.
Does the UK engage in hybrid warfare?
I think the United Kingdom has been extremely diligent in adhering to international law.
But does it engage in hybrid warfare?
It engages in warfare.
Of an hybrid nature?
Well, as I said at the beginning, you know, if you're going to win a war, you've got to be flexible, you've got to adapt your strategy, but you've got to keep it in line with the calculus of your national interests.
So that's a yes then.
Brian, you know, what is this guy? Is he there to give evidence to a select committee, or is he a politician? He seems to be almost, he's refusing to answer the question in the way that a politician would refuse to answer a question if they were on the Andrew Marr show or something like that. He's there to give supposedly expert evidence to a select committee, and the select committee is then producing reports which is supposed to feed into policy. And here's a man who's simply refusing to answer a simple yes or no question. What is he embarrassed about? Is it because he's involved in hybrid warfare himself?
Well, words nearly fail me on this one. I'll come back in a minute to our first gentleman, but Robert Johnson, why has he hesitated? Because he knows that at the moment the British government is involved in hybrid warfare, and that means effectively the British government is engaged in a war, certainly against Russia at the moment, which hasn't been declared to the voters of UK. So now we need to ask the question, who is running the country? Who is this man? How did he get into this position of power? And how is it he's prepared to sit in front of the TV cameras and essentially, what is he doing? He's lying by omission. Does he know? Maybe he doesn't know. But one thing we do know is because he doesn't give a straight answer, he's hiding something that's going on with the UK state. So I've got a lot of questions to ask about this man. You know, who gave him the authority to sit in this position advising? And if we come back to the lead gentleman.
Chris Donnelly.
Thank you, Chris Donnelly. Who is he exactly? Now, he's supposedly an ex-spook. There's some fascinating videos of him talking. Apparently, it seems to be he's in his kitchen, surrounded by kitchen utensils and a little wine stash and everything, as you do. But he's an ex-spook honorary colonel of NATO. I believe that's correct. And I'm very cynical about this because my feeling is you've either been in the military and done the job, or you're cruising around the edges somewhere. But who are these people? I wouldn't be laughing at them, Mike, because what they're talking about is war, but the government is not declaring what it's up to.
So, yes, Robert Johnson refusing to answer the question, but let's have a look at what Donnelly's response to the same question was. Now, of course, before he got the opportunity to answer that, Julian Lewis, the chairman of the committee, interjected with this.
I have to just interject at this point. Your institute, of course, has been attracted some publicity for something called the Integrity Initiative. How would you classify that in the context of what we've been discussing? And how would you classify the way in which attacks against your institute's programme have been orchestrated?
It is clearly an informational attack. Our programme was to look at exposing and educating people about disinformation attacks on the UK, and we ourselves have been subjected to a hacking attack to try and disrupt that programme, which is itself a classic example of hybrid warfare. Interestingly, it's very interesting for us to study the nature of that attack, because it tells us a lot about how such an attack can be orchestrated and who's behind it, and how that organisation is using people and institutions in the UK to its own ends.
What have you discovered so far?
A lot of interesting detail which I could go into later. Mm-hmm. But if I could pick on that point, if I could just pick up a couple of the other issues here, I would say by my study, by say a Russian standard or a Chinese standard, the UK is not waging hybrid warfare, but should be.
And David, that was a theme that he came back to on a number of occasions. Before we talk about Integrity Initiative itself, that was a theme he came back to on a number of occasions. We're not, but we should be. And really, he was pushing the notion that we should be doing a lot more in this area than we are, extremely hard. And, you know, later on, they were asking what countries should we be concerned about? Russia was, well, Julian Lewis said not in any particular order, but he began with Russia, China, North Korea, Iran, and Islamic State were the key targets that they saw for this. But Chris Donnelly himself, on a number of occasions, really reinforcing the idea that Britain should be doing a lot more in this area and fighting quite actively. And I thought that was a bit insightful in the sense of inciting a war.
It certainly was insightful language. It was certainly pretext to, you know, you could look at it quite objectively as a pretext to war in certain fashions. But the key thing here really is, of course, is that really the chair of defence committees asking someone that's wearing multiple hats and is involved with something that came into the media and into the House of Commons through Darby Criss and Emily Thornberry, the leader of, the deputy leader of the opposition, I think. You know, and Emily Thornberry's take on this was correct, that you had a government-funded company charity engaged in attacking members of the opposition, which isn't allowed. So, you know, OK, well, that's hybrid warfare, but that's internal. It's not external, that's internal. And really, if there wanted to be balance to that, the committee should have summoned Emily Thornberry and asked her the same question and had both ends of the equation. I mean, Donnelly really there is talking about control of the narrative and control of the information. And this is obviously something that's an internal, clearly now an internal issue, as Emily Thornberry has highlighted. And what exactly is that? Well, they want more sort of, they're calling for more in effect, you know, if you summed it up, calling for more in effect of this aspect of warfare.
Well, yes, let me jump in a second, David, because let me just talk about what more they were asking for, and then you can make your final point. They were talking about the fusion doctrine, about the merging of government departments and the cross-government approach and the increasing of that. They were talking about the increase of more money going into the likes of 77th Brigade, the sort of psychological operations aspect of the British Army, and expanding the remit of 77th Brigade and creating more brigades to go alongside 77th Brigade and so on. So, and although they were asking about whether the fusion doctrine was the right approach, clearly it seemed to me they had already made the decision that that was the right approach, and that while it may have an impact on money being taken away from traditional military units and so on, they clearly felt that in fact they needed to increase this. And one of the things, David, that struck me was that, you know, this was an evidence session from three so-called experts to the Select Committee, from which the Select Committee are supposed to draw conclusions and produce a report. But it was almost like it was a group of friends discussing something that they'd discussed 100 times before, and they were merely going through the actions of putting something on the record. And in fact, they were all in complete agreement already.
Yes, that's certainly how it appeared. It was completely closed loop from one end to the other. So my take on this is the calling for more, and they're not really bothered whether it infringes on conventional budgets, really, let's be honest, because nothing's been done to address that. But the calling for more in a co-op was a co-op to continue the European military unification process to defence union and single point command and control of all intelligence and defence services. and security services. So that is what was going on, but that was not articulated. They simply held back at the co-op part. But that's the key point: is it's a continue to cooperate to unify the defence union and single point control, because the direction there is on an EU basis through the Defence College, and that's mandated to promote the EU and work with the EU. So I don't see anything here that there was a pulling up or a pulling away in intelligence services or hybrid warfare, whether that be internal or external, that would be done going on a direction towards single point, because they were agreeing with fusion, which is British single point control, which would make it incredibly easy then to go with one flick of a switch to European single point control. So that's the whole gambit. It's stitch it all together.
Yeah.
Now, I've got to say, Donnelly must have mentioned Putin about 48 times or something. And he mentioned Russia about 80-odd times. Russia, 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 Russia. Well, I've got to say, I think that the man doth protest too much. It was so focused on there. You know, I mean, I suppose some psychologists could say, well, you know, is there, you know, does he really covet, or does he is he in love with Putin, or is he in love with Russia? Because it was constant. Our fundamental problems here are British and British internal problems. And if this is the case, and I know Brian has said this many, 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 many times, if Russia is so bad, why have we cut? Why have we taken out all this equipment? Why have we taken out all these personnel? If that was the case, then I'm sorry, that doesn't add up at all. There is another agenda, and the other agenda is EU Defence Union.
Yes.
They won't talk about it.
There's that agenda, David, EU Defence Union, and there is also the question as to who is committed to putting that Defence Union in place. And it's clear that people who want the EU to survive, the Defence Union to survive, are embedded in the British government. We'll come on to that a little bit later when we have a look at the Bruges group. But people, our viewers and listeners today, particularly those overseas, particularly people in America, should be asking, who are these individuals pushing for war with Russia? Because that's what these two gentlemen are doing. Because when that war is created, of course, the bulk of the bodies are going to be US military men and women. So we need to ask ourselves exactly who is Chris Donnelly, who put him in place, who put Dr. Robert Johnson in place, and who are they accountable to? Because at the moment they're being given a free platform to set government policy.
Well, look, I'll get some final thoughts from David in one second, but just one other point that I want to make here, and that is on a number of occasions during the evidence, Dr. Robert Johnson made the statement that he knows that there are several senior Russian generals who are preparing for war with the West at this point in time. At no point did he attempt to make any kind of assessment as to why they were preparing for war. I'm quite certain that they are preparing for war. But the fact is that Russia has been under sustained attack for a number of years now from Britain, from Europe, well, less so perhaps from Europe, but certainly from Britain and the United States. NATO has done what it said it would never do, which is to expand into the former Warsaw Pact countries. And so, you know, bearing all that in mind and bearing the hybrid attacks that Russia has been suffering at our behest, it's not a surprise that they may be preparing for something. So, David, just we're out of time on this. Just 30 seconds. Just give us some closing comments.
I mean, let's just sum up what we saw there yesterday. A dog and pony show. MPs not thinking for themselves at all. They're just marionettes, in effect. So what do we know? We know that war is the preferred vehicle for change. And we know this through the Norman Dodd revelations at the Rees Committee, and we know this through the process that's being used. And that doesn't matter whether that's the Soviet using it or the EU using the same process. That the change agenda here is to stitch the geography of the continent together for Europe and Russia into one blob. Now, the Russians look like they're resisting that. And I'm not going to prejudice anything that comes forward, but that's how it looks at the moment. But it looks like really what this side is trying to do is to actually go for the war and bring about the change and stitch it all together. That's the direction of travel, because that's the only thing that the EU can do as an empire with a unified military and security force. It's the only thing it's going to do. It isn't going to do anything else, because it isn't addressing the economic or the social issues in any of the countries. It isn't addressing the unemployment and the economic benefits of people. It's highly engaged in this. And I've got to say that talking to the MPs there in the lobby, again, refusing to take on board what we were warning them of, talking me out of the conversation, which they've done on the phone. They don't want to hear this. They don't understand that the way to stop May's deal is to bring the defence union component into the debate in the House of Commons and stop this ridiculous deal, which is carrying on in the EU. So they don't get it. They're 180 degrees away. One MP told me in the lobby that this is not the time to bring defence union into the debate. And he's completely wrong. This is the time, because no one will vote for it. And this is the way of stopping the deal, because who will support it, knowing full well that it meant actually continuing to have defence union? No one will vote for it, but he won't talk about it. So they're hypocrites.
Absolutely. And, I can't think of a better time to bring it into the debate than right now. But anyway, information, social media was part of what was going on at Defence Committee yesterday. In the meantime, in the United States, at John Hopkins University, in a few days' time, they're holding this event, Reawakening the Spirit of Democracy. They say nativism and authoritarianism are gaining a foothold in countries around the globe. Populist movements are growing. Long-established international alliances are fraying. Institutions that protect and promote our liberties are being buffeted by attacks from the right and the left. These trends have led many to ask, can liberal democracy endure? They've got a whole bunch of different people, senators, Democrat senators. They've got Majority Leader, former Republican House Majority Leader Eric Cantor. They've got a bunch of neocons, Paul Wolfowitz, Max Boot, Bill Kristol, some journalists from the New York Times and the Washington Post as panelists. MI6s, or former, perhaps, maybe, it's not really clear. Christopher Steele, of course, the man who authored the dodgy dossier against Trump, was supposed to be taking part on it. But as Politico here is reporting, he has decided to pull out of that. He has apparently pulled out on advice of counsel. So I'm not quite sure what his legal team has decided is particularly difficult about this event. But he is no longer going to take part. He was going to be speaking about disinformation and democracy. But Edward Lucas, we don't need to worry. There's plenty of Integrity Initiative representation of this, because Edward Lucas will be speaking at it. Anne Applebaum herself will be there. And also Evelyn Farkas, who is former Deputy Defence Secretary and is currently on the German Marshall Fund. So plenty of activity in this area going on. But in the meantime, sticking with European defence, of course, the issue of European defence and NATO is a big one. And Jens Stoltenberg today, unfortunately, the event hadn't taken place by the time we came on air. But Jens Stoltenberg today is in the European Parliament meeting Antonio Tajani, the European Parliament's president, one of the three European EU presidents. Again, putting a lie to the notion that EU Defence Union and NATO are somehow exclusive. They are talking very closely together and have been for a number of years. But back in the UK then, we have the publication of this. Now, it's published on the Briefings for Brexit website. This is described as a treaty between the UK and Northern Ireland and the European Union for Defence, Security and Intelligence Cooperation. It's written by Gwythian Prince, also Field Marshal Lord Guthrie, who's the former Chief of Defence Staff, and Sir Richard Dearlove, former Chief of MI6. Now, Gwythian Prince was speaking to Julia Hartley Brewer this morning on Talk Radio, he had this to say.
the people voted on the 23rd of June 2016 to leave the EU. They didn't vote, as we all know, for a negotiation of this or that. They voted to leave. And that means a sovereign Brexit, which is the correct name for it, rather than a no-deal Brexit. And what we, that is to say, Richard Dearlove, I, and Field Marshal the Lord Guthrie, one of the most significant of the Chiefs of the Defence Staff of recent years, have done this morning, is to publish a draft treaty on defence and security and intelligence that we should sign with the EU after we leave on the 29th of March. And, Julia, the reason we've done this is because the public is simply not aware that the government has embedded what we regard professionally as a fatal concession within its total withdrawal strategy on defence and security, because it is offering up effectively the crown jewels of our national security, which is our intelligence alliance with the United States and with what is called the Five Eyes Alliance. The British government has done something completely bizarre. What they have done is this. After we left, the EU said, right, we're now going to create the defence union, and they started passing legislation through European councils, and we approved it all. Now, that's quite logical, because we were leaving, right?
Yeah.
And since we were leaving, we don't want to be a dog in a manger. So through five European councils from 2016 to 2018, we allowed them to pass a whole shedload of legislation to set up a defence identity for the EU.
Now, there was two things there, David, that struck me about that little piece on talk radio. The first is he has attempted to funnel this discussion down to the intelligence services. But as we've been highlighting for a very long time, particularly last week, the issue of defence union and security, it's multifaceted. It's not just intelligence. It's every aspect of Britain's defence. And therefore, to try to limit the discussion to one particular area is a bit possibly disingenuous, but maybe you've got a different view on that. But the other thing, he suggested that Britain had allowed the EU to pursue this, that they really only voted to go along with it because we were leaving anyway. But David, the point that we've been making on this programme for several years, for 3 years or so, is of course the intention was never to leave. And we were always going to be engaged in EU institutions in some way or another. And so the idea that Britain would simply vote in favour of this idea because we were leaving is also a little disingenuous, is it not?
There's a huge amount of problems here with this on many levels. So as a point of status, the Cabinet Office, the engine room of government, so this is the closed government in silence, in effect, is set and tasked and designated to unify us into the EU. Nobody's gone in there politically under a democratic mandate and stopped it or turned it off. So there's no democratic or political will to do that that's apparent and obvious and functioning. There was an attempt clearly under Maggie, and that seems to have stopped with Major Cameron, Blair and May, who are all pro-EU. It's a pro-EU leadership stitch-up. So as I said before, forget the parties. That doesn't apply. So that's the first thing. And one of the key parts is defence union. After that, then there's the money and all the rest of it follows suit. It's a hand-in-glove operation. So he's talking about a co-op treaty. So that worries me. Now, I've not seen this paper and I've not read it, but that worries me to start with. So we what do we know as fact? The EU want single point command and control of all defence and security services. So how on earth do you sign a treaty with that? How does that work when if you're going to have some sort of one leg in, one leg out, okey-cokey type of arrangement? I'm very eager to read this now. So it concerns me greatly as to, I mean, he's used the term defence union, but we've not allowed it. The British people haven't allowed this because it's not been put to them. So who does he mean by we? Who's we? because it's been done in parliamentary silence. It doesn't matter what you put to these MPs, they won't talk about it, because let's be honest, they know damn well what the British people would say. They would say no in a majority very quickly.
Yeah,
it's so easy. And yet they're professing to want to leave, and they're professing to want to block Mrs. May's, you know, dreadful, you know, her deal is to stay in the EU. It's the only way you can sum it up. Her deal is stay in the EU, but it's stay in the EU as a vassal state with no input. So it's a far worse arrangement than what we had to begin with. Surely this should be for an MP, like hitting a cow's backside with a banjo. You want votes to stop this, bring the defence union into the debate and get a majority, because what MP would support the surrendering of all our defence and intelligence services to the EU? None of them. You wouldn't find a majority for that.
David, as usual, you're spot on there with your banjo. Just to comment on Mr. Prince, he used an expression there which immediately perked up, sovereign Brexit. Of course, it is absolutely not sovereign, because the Brexit proposed will leave our military forces under the control of the EU. So he spins the moment he starts talking that it's going to be a sovereign Brexit. And then the rest of it, yes, is cloudy. But who is he to be producing a draft policy? You've now said it. Who are these people? I think what we've got, we'll loosely call them the deep state coming to the surface. These are the people who are behind the scenes normally controlling politics, and our MPs, backbenchers in particular, don't have a clue as to what's going on. Let's have a look at the Bruges group, which, of course, is pro-conservative or deeply conservative supposed think tank that's very worried about Brexit. Let's have a look at what they've been talking about recently. So if you go onto their website, these are some of the glossy articles that you can see. But what caught my eye this morning was two. This is the first one, dangers to national security and individual freedom in Mrs. May's withdrawal agreement. This has been produced by a gentleman called Torquil, who we know quite a bit about because he's been very active originally within UKIP or on the fringes of UKIP. And he has been very, very accurate about his interpretation as to what the EU's been doing. So let's have a look at the sort of thing he's been warning about here. Little bit difficult to see on screen, but I'll just give you the bullet points. In his executive summary, he says that we should be worried about shared sovereignty. That's still an issue. He says the European Convention and Court of Human Rights does not include habeas corpus, and therefore we've got this problem that the legal system in UK and the EU is 180 degrees out. Number three, our idea of freedom of speech is not shared by all our EU neighbours. Well, that's certainly true as far as the public's concerned, but what our government is doing is showing us they don't believe in free speech either. Four, how far can we trust our EU partners in the long term? How long will our subjection to EU supremacy last? And can we escape? And he goes on with yet more. All good points. So he's saying the crucial role of security in the issue of sovereignty. He's picked up on the point. Defence and defence procurement, European justice. But interestingly enough, in his paper, there's no mention of the critical words EU Defence Union. And then we had this one, and I think you'll find this one interesting, David. Think tanks and Maginot lines. Now, this has been produced by Dr. Lee Rotherham. He's produced some good material for Veterans for Britain, but we've also been critical that he's been shy of speaking out. But in this particular report, he's got some really excellent material, and he's warning about the dangers of think tanks, which are actually supported by the European Union, but they're active not only on the continent, but in this country, driving policy. And I think it's this policy which we're now starting to see is coming up to the surface. So he says a brief review of the nature of EU funding might be of value at this point, as it extends to think tanks dealing with security and defence issues in other European countries. So EU money, which is helped is used to set British defence policy. And if we go on here, he's talking about the impact on the UK EU security debate. Let's look at the first paragraph. Demonstrably, there is from the above a clear money link that unites a partisan element in the security debate, the European Commission, with think tanks whose output is intended to influence policy attitudes in governments, professions and industries. And he goes on and he says, what is less immediately obvious is the personal aspect. In a number of cases, the institutions employ staff that are not UK nationals. Indeed, the CER, for example, makes play of underlining that half of its staff comes from other EU countries. In itself, this generates an underappreciated risk of bias. Well, that's very measured language, but what he's really saying is the EU is buried amongst the policy-making units of this country. And he goes on with this section, a silent revolution. And he's talking about the common security and defence policy. He says it is unquestionably happening. A lot of material has been put in the public domain by EU institutions, setting out what their ambitions are. So it's all being put on the table. And remember that this is for the Bruges group. He lists key things that have happened, structural, generating permanent frameworks for activities such as standing HQs. And David, you've been talking about the EU military HQs in this country. He moves on. He's talking policy, increasing central communal decision making. That's your central point control, financial. That's including a treasury, industrial, organisational. So all this is here. All of this is being put under the noses of the Bruges group, who are Conservative Party through and through. But actually, what do? They do nothing with this information, and there's no mention of EU Defence Union again. So what is it? I know we're tight for time, David, but what is it about this EU Defence Union term? It's been declared by the EU, but nobody in this country seems brave enough to use it.
Absolutely. They're not brave enough because they know damn well what the British people will make once they're aware of the term. We're all blatantly aware of customs union or any currency union. But the majority of British people are not aware of this. They're being denied it. And this was the big call in Brexit, is we want the information. And this information was withheld from them from a pro-EU leadership stitch-up, regardless of what party you thought you, whether you were Conservative or Labour or Liberal or UKIP or whatever, and remain and leave. It was a one big stitch-up that this one key factor was withheld. Now, Lee there on those pieces that he's put out has put more out there than the entire Conservative Party over the last however many decades since Maggie Thatcher.
Yeah.
So really what we want is Lee Rotherham as a minister or Lee Rotherham as prime minister. Maybe we'd have a chance. Now, I understand he's been parliamentary boarded and approved to be a candidate. So somebody needs to back this bloke so we can actually get in the House of Commons and do a good job, because fundamentally I do not believe that the put to the British people that they would accept at the ballot box defence union, and that is why they will not use the phrase. Because if you ask the general public very quickly, would you support the policy of us going into defence union, I'm convinced a majority in this pub in the country would say no very quickly, because they would understand what it meant.
And that's why
they won't use this term.
We ran the Twitter poll. 93% said no way.
Yeah. And there you go. It's academic. Out of 2,000 people that took that poll, blistering transition rate for people clicking through and doing it, double what we've seen with anything else. So really, really passionate people. And a result of 90%. You could have a landslide majority on that one issue alone if you were prepared to do it as a party and put it in your manifesto and campaign on it.
Right, David, staying on the Bruges group. So we've got the Bruges group at the moment on its website has key information about the EU Defence Union, but the Bruges group as a group is not talking about it. Their partnered MPs are not talking about it. Now, thank you very much to some eagle-eyed UK column viewers. There were several of them spotted that there was a conversation or posting on the Bruges Group blog recently, and they captured it. And it's just as well they did, because this disappeared. It was taken down. Let's see what this gentleman, John Petley, had to say. He's calling it duplicitous leaders. He says there's no doubt about the veracity of this account since documents have been seen. On Monday, July the 9th, 2018, several leading French, German and Dutch senior managers were called by EU officials to an urgent meeting. The meeting was said to be private, and those present were informed that Prime Minister May and Chancellor Merkel had reached an agreement over Brexit. Knowledge of this was attained from the actual transcript of the meeting between May and Merkel. And then there are a number of points. One, the agreement was couched in a way to appease the Brexit voters. The agreement would enable May to, quote, get rid of those people in her party who were against progress and unity in the EU. Three, both Merkel and May agreed that the likely course of events would be that UK would rejoin the EU in full at some time after the next general election. May agreed to keep as many EU laws and institutions as she could, despite the current groundswell of anti-EU hysteria in Britain, the anti-EU hysteria in brackets there. Although it's saying that those were May's own words, allegedly. Merkel and May agreed that the only realistic future for the UK was within the EU. The original agreement draft was completed in May 2018 in Berlin and then sent to the UK government cabinet office marked secret. And so it goes on, but it also gives conclusions, and we'll read those very quickly. Documents make it quite clear that Prime Minister May was negotiating with Germany, not the EU. The transcript also makes it clear that the Prime Minister intended to keep all this secret from ministers, especially the Brexit group. She wants to keep as many EU institutions in UK as intact as possible in order to facilitate that easy return to the EU after 2020. Chancellor Merkel briefed May on tactics to force cabinet approval. The Prime Minister and senior civil servants were working with Germany to stop Brexit or water it down to prevent free trade and the ending of freedom of movement, but to keep cash flowing to the EU. David Davis was kept in the dark while key EU premiers in France, Holland and Ireland were briefed in full. Key EU heads were actually briefed in full the day before the cabinet meeting at Chequers. I'm just going to drop in treason May, question mark. David, this is incredible information, and the gentleman putting it out is not just an ordinary member of the public. Perhaps we just better bring him up on screen here so that we can see what's what. He read music at Oxford and has a diploma in applied theology from Magdalen Bible College. He says he wasn't active in politics until he was over 40 years, but he subsequently worked as 2 years as a researcher in the European Union. So the man knows the system. And then he's been working with a campaign for an independent Britain. This information is dynamite. We've suspected this has been going on. Now we're getting closer to these dirty behind closed door meetings.
This is absolute dynamite, isn't it? This guy's right on it. This is critical stuff that the general public need to know about. And yet the Bruges Group have took it down. But aren't they campaigning to Brexit? Sorry, we need to know about this sort of stuff. It should be on the front page of their website. Can I suggest that everybody sort of grabs and propagates this? And if it's possible, can we make an approach to this man and get it on the UK column website? Because I think this is critical stuff and he's doing really good work.
I think so too. So we've got a problem now that we've got people inside this country still absolutely working with the European Union. And Steve Baker MP in that video clip, which we had up about a week ago, said that the problem was that we had a government that did not want to carry out what the voters had demanded, which was to leave Brexit. So it seems to me that we've now got this very murky pond in politics. The backbenchers don't know what the Cabinet Office is doing. The Cabinet Office is having dirty behind closed door meetings with the Germans in order to stop Brexit. And then in the wings, we've got people like Mr. Prince that's muddying the waters by saying, well, it's not a defence union problem. It's tied in with intelligence. This is either breakdown or we've got the deep state coming to the surface. And I think it's the latter.
The submarine surfaced. Absolutely. The submarine has surfaced. It used to be used to put a periscope up decades ago, and now it's completely up. You know, it's there. You can see it.
Yeah. Well, OK, we've covered a lot of defence issues today, quite rightly, because this affects the sovereignty of this nation, and that sovereignty is being given away behind closed doors by Theresa May's government. Many people would call that treason. It must be close to. But ultimately, where are they going to take us if they can achieve the European Union project? Well, they're declaring at the moment what they want is war with Russia. So if you're an overseas viewer and you're concerned about what's happening in UK and the impact on European world politics, then spread the information, because, of course, Theresa May's Conservative government working flat out to ensure that free speech is shut down so that they can continue to manoeuvre in the dark. We'll leave it there. Thanks very much for joining us. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.